Okay, well, thank you very much, Don and Dave. As I said, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. Remember this group, and it's great to be here on, what is today? January
26th.
I made it. 25th was my birthday. I made it to 35 years. I haven't found necessarily to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. So it's all downhill from here, you know, and no, it's good to be here. It really is good to be here. This is my home group, and usually I'm used to driving 40 miles to a meeting or something like that, to a step meeting, so it's nice to be able to come here to y'all and try to do whatever I can to maybe help somebody. I'm just going to read a couple things, and we'll talk a little bit about this dis-ease that we have in common. And I think I'm going to start with this part and envision for you. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better. I work better. I'm having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with them. He'll presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. I think I want to talk about loneliness. Thank you very much. The other part of the book that I think I want to read is this part right here in the doc's opinion. Says these men may well have a remedy for thousands of such situations. You may rely on anything they say about them, anything they say about themselves. And I think I'm always on solid ground or at my best most of the time when I talk about my own personal experiences. And so after 35 years of road testing this thing, without the alcohol, this life we have, I have a lot of experiences with dealing with this disease, the actual disease, not drunk, not the drinking thing, which is really just a symptom of the disease, but the actual disease through thick and through thin. I know what it feels like to deal with the disease when you're bored. I know what it feels like to deal with the disease when you're disappointed. I know what it feels like to deal with the disease when you're treated unfairly, whatever that is. I know what it's like to deal with the disease when you're broke. I know what it's like to deal with the disease when you got a lot of money. I know what it's like to deal with the disease when the IRS is after you, when you're threatened with foreclosure, when you're dealing with kids and grandkids and a wife who is unreasonable and really doesn't understand because she belongs to Al-Anon, Our Ladies of Perpetual Revenge. I know how to deal with this disease in life situations, the same situations that we all basically have in common. When that FPNL bill comes in again, every month that sucker comes in, bills every single month. You got to fund the 4-minute. I know how to deal with alcoholism when you're worried about money. I know how to deal with alcoholism. I've learned how to deal with alcoholism when you're worried. Not that alcoholics are anxious or worry about anything, but I know about that deal. I know what it feels. I know what the disease, I've learned what the disease feels like. I never really knew what the disease felt like. I never felt the disease. I just felt the way I felt. I didn't realize I was diseased. I came in here because I thought I had a drinking problem. I believe, and I now one of the things I will plead guilty to this, after 35 years with not only dealing with my own dis-ease, my own malady, my own alcoholism, and dealing, sponsoring people, and dealing with sponsees and watching people in the room dealing with their alcoholism, I have adopted certain opinions. I have opinions about the disease. I have opinions about the solution in the most case and in most cases and how this thing is supposed to go. I've been practicing it for a long time, and every once in a while I'll give an opinion. I'll just sort of throw it out there, and you're free to discard the opinions. And you know, I could be wrong. It's possible, you know, but I'd like to think that based upon my experience, I'm not coming up here to try to give some misinformation to people. I want to try to help people. What I want to do is the best I can to try to help people out with this thing. And the truth of the matter is I know that the way this disease works and the way the recovery works, when the pupil's ready, the teacher appears. And many times I've gone to meetings, and I'm sure I've been told many, many things early on that I just didn't hear until 10 or 15 years later. I just wasn't ready to hear. I just wasn't ready to hear the things that were being said. 15 or 20 years later, I was ready to hear those things for the first time, and all of a sudden they become... Because what happens is your story changes. I change. There's a transformation. I walked in here because I had a drinking problem. I had a lot of problems, but I really had a drinking problem. That was the thing I focused on. I couldn't stop drinking. I said to some guy, I need help. I can't stop drinking. You know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, stuff that I had going against me, defects of character, old ideas that were entrenched in my mind, which I learned later, it's my personality. Those old ideas are my, it sounds terrible when you say it that way. You know, we're in love with our personalities because we're so unique and we're so different, and what makes us different from anybody else makes us special, our personalities. Well, if your personality has to do with your ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are basically old ideas and they're entrenched with you, and the big book's saying there's something going on inside you, they call it old ideas. I mean, what do you think they're talking about? They're talking about the way we look at ourselves, the way we look at others, the way we look at the world, the way that we look at sex, the way we look at lust, the way we look at the seven deadly sins, pride, anger, all our ideas. And you know what it says? The book says our ideas. We're talking our thinking, our ideas about life. We got to let go of them absolutely. We got to get rid of them all. I mean, try to think of the implication. It's like every idea in your mind that you walk in here with, that you're absolutely sure of, that, you know, sort of runs your thinking and makes your decision, you'll be okay as long as we can download them out and make you a blank and start filling you up with new ideas. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, and quite frankly, your ideas shape your personality and who you are and what you are and what you say and how you act and how you feel. Your ideas, you know, any time I have a bad feeling, it was always fueled by a lot of thinking beforehand. You know, whenever I see somebody depressed, there's been a lot of thinking going on. And what does it say in the big book? It says ideas, emotion. When Dr. Young says to Roland Hazard, remember Roland was the guy who went to the psychiatrist and said, after a year of treatment by one of the top psychiatrists, he said, now knowing the inner workings of my mind, drinking was impossible. Drinking was impossible because I know all about myself. And within 2 weeks, he was drunk again. He went up to Dr. Young, and Dr. Young said, he said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen anybody recover when that state of mind exists like it does in you. He says, are there no exceptions? He says, yeah, exceptions to you come along once in a while. They call them phenomena. You know, some of us call them miracles. I think phenomena is a scientific way of saying miracle. We don't understand it, but this is the way he describes it. Dr. Young describes it this way. He says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, I'm just going to lump those into the basket of old ideas. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes are shifted off to one side. It says ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are driving forces of these men's lives. Driving. Emphasis on driving forces of these men's lives. You know, you ever ask yourself, why did I do that? Or more to the point, anybody ever ask you, why did you do that? You know, you ever remember being asked the question, what were you thinking? You know, why did you make that phone call? Why did you write that letter? You know, what possessed you to say that? You know, you ever question yourself for weeks on end, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Why did I? And the best answer you come up with is, I have no flippin' idea. And then after you say, I have no flippin' idea, right after that comes the recrimination, I'm an asshole, I ought to kill myself. You know that kind of deal? You know what that is? That's the disease. Yeah, I don't have to be drunk. You don't have to be drunk. You don't have to be drunk to be hating yourself and calling yourself an asshole and not understanding why you act. You don't have to be drunk. As a matter of fact, drunk solves that problem. Drunk is the solution to that thinking. Drunk solves a lot of shit, you know? So it stops that deal. That's one of the reasons I drank, because it stops you from... When I drank, I didn't think. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are the driving forces of these men's lives are suddenly cast over to one side. I quite frankly, have learned in my own personal life over a period of time that suddenly sometimes takes 30 years. Suddenly is not necessarily, you know, in the Bible they say for God, a year is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years like a day. You know, it's like suddenly can take 10 years, you know. It's not like it all goes like that. Are cast one time and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. And then it has this statement. It says, still you may say, but I will not. Now, this is the last page in the book, Vision for You. I'm sort of hopping around because there is actually a subject I want to get to. Still you may say, I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. Capital H. Your real reliance always must be upon Him. And then they have this line. Now, by the way, this is our basic text. You all know this. This is our basic text. Basic text. I'm not making this crap up. This is in my... I'm not talking about my opinion now. This is the... Allegedly, they say early on in the book, is that we've all come to a common agreement. We all sort of agree on this book. You know what I mean? We read this book. We agree on this book. You know, this book has a lot of implications. Sometimes we read lines in this book, and they don't become pertinent to our lives until maybe 10 years down the road. Or maybe we'll read a line and we think we know what it means, but like 10 years later, it means something different to us. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in because I couldn't stop drinking. As a result of being an alcoholic and not being able to stop drinking, my life was a mess. My life was unmanageable. After coming into Alcoholics, I had a story. I had a testimony. I mean, after I was a year sober, 2 years sober, I could get up, I could tell my story. My story was about, you know, what it was like for me, what happened with alcohol. It was about alcohol. It was about drinking alcohol. It was where alcohol took me. It was about what happened to me when I drank alcohol. And my story culminated with my saying, I couldn't stop drinking. My life was unmanageable. Ultimately, I got down on my knees. I asked God to come to my life. I looked a guy in the eye, said, I need help. I couldn't stop drinking. I came to the AA, I picked up a white chip, and I haven't had a drink in a year. And things are great, and everything's wonderful. After 10 years or 15 years of not drinking alcohol, I had a different story. I had a different story because my story was not about so much not drinking. It was about living life for 15 years while being married with four kids, supporting four kids, and dealing with life for 15 years sober, without drinking. It wasn't a drinking story. I mean, I had a story. There was some drinking there. It was what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. What it was like 5 minutes, you know, like 10 minutes, you know. That's what it was like, you know. And then what happened, and then what it's like now was like about 15, 20 minutes. What's going on in my life now? How do I deal with resentments? How do I deal with what happened to me on the way over here when the guy flipped me a bird? It was all about current events. I got 35 years. I got a different story. I mean, I'm as alcoholic as when I came into the rooms, but I've been sober, physically sober, basically three times longer than my drinking career. I remember the drinking. I especially remember it when other people talk, but my story is different now. My story is about dealing with this disease without the alcohol. It's very hard to understand what the disease is. You know, the first step in getting out of jail, this is what I was told. I was told the first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. Makes sense. The first step in stopping drinking alcohol is you got to know you're an alcoholic. Well, the first step in getting out of the alcoholism is you got to know what alcoholism is about. And I walked in here thinking alcoholism was about drinking alcohol. And if I could stop drinking alcohol, things would get better. And I stopped drinking alcohol, and things got better. And then they weren't so good. Alcoholism, living as a sober alcoholic, I don't know about you, but I'm going to just testify about me. Look, I love AA. I love my sobriety. I'm grateful to God for my sobriety. Now that I said that, let me tell you something. Being a sober alcoholic in this world is a very painful experience. I find it's very, very painful. Now, you guys are probably like floating on the cloud. You guys probably don't even have a bad moment. You guys don't worry. You're not anxious about anything. You're never lonely. You never feel empty. You never worry about things. You never let things get on your nerves. You never find yourself, for no apparent reason whatsoever, feeling a little depressed or a little sad or a little down. I know this stuff never happens to you, but I'll tell you something. It was happening to me all the time. While I was doing step meetings, while I was talking, I mean, I had, you know, it would come upon me. The feelings would come upon me. Life for an alcoholic like me is, like I told my sponsor, I said, I'm sensitive. He says, no, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. You know, I mean, it's difficult dealing with, I mean, you spend the first 10 years trying to, you spend the first time 10 years asking yourself that unanswerable questions. The first 10 years you spend sober, you spend yourself doing things like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? 15 years sober. You're 15 years sober. You've been working this thing for 15 bloody years, going to meetings, and you still got that bullshit going on from time to time. Maybe not as much, but from time to time, you're going, what's wrong with me? When is this thing going to leave? When am I going to stop this deal? You know what I mean? You go to meetings, you ask your sponsor, you're looking for the answer, you're looking for the cure. You know what I mean? Drinking is out of the question, but you know, I mean, you know, why do I let things get to me? Why? What's wrong with me? Why can't I sleep? Why was I up last night at 3 o'clock? Why am I always thinking about this? When can I stop? There's so much stuff, it's painful. I don't have any idea what normal people, how they deal with life. Or maybe they don't feel any of these feelings. You know, but I know I know one thing. After hanging around alcoholics for a long period of time, and Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholics, that even though one of my old ideas is I'm the only one in the room that has ever felt this way, I know that I'm wrong about that. I know that I'm not unique, that alcoholics suffer from a lot of things and a lot of feelings and a lot of old ideas and a lot of stuff that sort of like keep them in bondage for a long period of time, that they're not rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. They're not experiencing much of heaven once in a while here and there. But the bottom line is that it's a struggle. It's a trudge. It's a struggle. And we spend a great deal of time, if you're, you know, when it says in the big book, the spiritual axiom, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. And I can tell you, and you know, one of my old ideas is when I'm disturbed, I want to talk about what's wrong with you. I want to talk about what's wrong with Dave. Listen, I am absolutely sure that when I'm disturbed, everything would be okay if my wife would act better. When I'm disturbed, I absolutely know, there's no doubt about it, that I'd be okay if I had more money. When I'm disturbed, no matter what's going on, I know I'd be okay if we had a different president. I mean, I am 100% sure that the problem is not me. I'm absolutely sure, and I want to tell you something. I will be more than happy to go to any AA meeting or anywhere, any bar, any AA meeting, to explain to you what my problem is. And believe me, when I start explaining to you what my problem is, I'll explain it succinctly, I'll name the person, I'll tell you exactly what he did or he didn't do, and I'll be absolutely sure that that's the problem. And I can promise you this, the problem will not be moi. It won't be me. And that's part of my alcoholism. And this deal tells, you know, I can't even remember. I'm not even sure how long it took me in AA to finally accept the spiritual axiom, being whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. I am quite sure that even though somehow deep inside when I first came in and going to AA meetings, I knew that I was screwed up and crazy. I knew it was drummed into me by my sponsor that I was nuts, that my best thinking got me in here. But without question, at least for the first 5 years, I spent most of my time complaining about other people. The one thing I remember using a sponsor for, the one, when I think of my sponsor, what I think about is a guy that I could go to complain. When I think of discussion meetings, and when I think about meetings in AA and discussion meetings, what I remember is going to meetings so I could complain about something that was going on in my life. I remember complaining. I mean, something must have changed, because I got to be honest with you. I mean, and this is the truth. I don't complain anymore. I mean, I don't complain because I know what the problem is. It has nothing to do with what's, I know what, I am absolutely, absolutely sure of what the problem is. You know, if I have cancer, and I've had cancer twice, and I'm not feeling good about that, I know it has nothing to do with the cancer. Because I know it's possible to have cancer and feel okay. If somebody disappoints me and they act badly, and it disappoints me and I'm disappointed and I'm feeling bad, I know that my feelings and my feeling bad and acting bad has nothing to do with the person who disappointed me. I know it has to do with me, because I know there are people that have been disappointed worse and they don't feel bad about it. And I know that the spiritual acts, I have proven to myself, the way alcoholics do it, the way we do it, over and over and over again until we get it, right? You know, I don't know about you, I didn't have like one bad drink and get drunk, and all of a sudden I said, Jesus, I'm an alcoholic, I got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to get drunk over and over and over again over a period of 15 years, lose a wife, lose a child, lose a house, before I even said to myself, I think I might have a problem with alcohol. How many times do you have to how many times do you have to complain, be taught, be told, learn before you realize and finally adopt the idea where instead of having the old idea, the immediately, you know, I have a first nature and a second nature. My first nature is, I can't believe what that son of a bitch did to me. I just can't believe what happened to me. I can't believe what they did to me. That's my first nature. That's my first nature. It's ingrained with me. And I have a second nature. Why is this bothering me? I remember Joe Snyder, when I complained, and this, I won't go through the whole story, I'll do the short version. When I said to him, I went through a half an hour tirade about my wife and what she did, and gave him all these specifics of what she did and how she did it, and she was probably wrong, I have no idea, but I complained about something she did. I was very clear, I was very precise, and he said, do you know why you're upset? And I said, of course I know why I'm upset. He said, why are you upset? I said, I just spent a half an hour telling you why I was upset. I just spent a half an hour on the phone. I don't know about you, but if I'm upset, I'm going to tell you why I'm upset, and I'm going to be clear about it. You're going to have no doubt as to why I'm upset, and I know all you guys are excellent at reporting about the people that have screwed up your life. And I told him precisely why I was upset. I told her exactly what she said and what she did. And he said, that's not why you're upset. I said, that's not why I'm upset. He said, that's not why you're upset. This is 10 years sober. This is 10 years sober doing step series in meetings, you know, working the steps, sponsoring people, you know? And he says, that's not why you're upset. I said, that's not why I'm upset. No, that's not why you're upset. And finally I said, well, why am I upset? He said, listen, stupid, you're upset because you're upsettable. You know, I have people, I understand this deal. I have people that come up to me and they'll say to me, you know, I went to a meeting once and you said something to me. You said something and it sort of like changed my life. I mean, I don't take credit for it. But then they say it sort of changed. That's what happened. You'll be going along for weeks, months, years, maybe a decade, doing the same thing over and over again. Hearing about the spiritual axiom, whenever there's something wrong with you. And it's in your head, but it never goes to your heart. And then all of a sudden, one day, you're on the phone with your sponsor, and your sponsor says, listen, stupid, you're upset because you're upsettable. And all of a sudden, it comes together, and you get it. You get it. 5 years sober, I'm complaining to my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan. Every time I went to complain to him, he would say the same thing to me. Say, when was the last meeting you went to? I said, what do you mean? What does that have to do with it? He says, when was the last meeting you went to? I said, the day before yesterday. go to three or four meetings a week. He said, he would say this, he'd say, you know, Russ, when you go to meetings, you feel good. When you don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. I said, I know, but let me tell you about this problem. You know? 5 years complaining to my first sponsor. 5 years of him saying, when was the last meeting you went to? I went to one the day, you know, Tuesday. He says, you know, Russ, when you go to meetings, you feel good. When you don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. 5 years of that. In JJ's American Diner, when I was 5 years sober, we were sitting there talking, and I was complaining about something, because if you're an alcoholic and you got a sponsor, that's what sponsors are for. You get to complain to them. And they got to listen. They got to listen to you, you know, because love and tolerance is our code, you know. And, you know, unless I'm your sponsor, and then it's a bad situation. You don't want to do that. So in any event, so I was complaining to Bob in the restaurant after 5 years. And he said, and after he was done, he said, well, when was the last meeting you went to? And I said the same, you know, like day before yesterday. He said, you know, Russ, when you go to meetings, you feel good. When you don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. I got up from the table and I was driving home right along Red Road South. And I remember driving home and I remember saying to myself, all of a sudden, now he'd only been saying this to me for 5 years. And I'm a pretty bright guy, you know, because this is when you're bright, it really hampers the situation. Because we're self will run riot. And I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rational lies. And we're so smart, we outsmart ourselves. We're too smart to get this thing. You can never be too dumb to get it, but you can be too smart to get it. And I'm driving home, and I say, and all of a sudden I say this. I hear this. When you go to meetings, you feel good. When you don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. When you go to meetings, you feel good. I remember repeating it. When you go to meetings, you feel good. When you go, I'm thinking, when you go to meetings, you feel good. When you don't go to meetings, I'm thinking, go to meetings, you feel good. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. And then all of a sudden, it said, wait a second, you know. If I go to meetings, I'll feel good. If I don't go, I'm going to go to a meeting every day. And I started going to a meeting every morning at 7:30 for like the rest of my life for 15 years. And within 2 months, my entire attitude about life and aspect changed. Brilliant. Brilliant. It only took me 5 years. 5 years to figure that one out. You know what I mean? So this is how we learn. We learn slowly. It's tough to give up old ideas, whatever they are. This is tough to, you know, battle this. We're battling, you know, I hate to say this. We are battling a horrible and terrible disease of the mind and body. The drinking is but a symptom of our disease. Our real disease settles in our mind and our body. You understand what I'm saying? We are battling a vicious disease that settles in a virulent mind and body. And here's the deal. We are battling this sucker with one hand tied behind our back. We are really not in the best of... I need all the help. I need every sponsor. I need every meeting. I need every book. And I need every situation that happened to me. I need every bad thing that happened to me in my life that I can complain about to show me that I've still got a problem. You know, I wouldn't have realized, you know, the truth is every problem that I thought was a terrible problem had the key to the solution in it. I would never have realized how sick I was without the alcohol if I didn't have the benefit of having problems. I would never have realized how dependent I was on material things and the lack thereof and how much they ran my life and how much I worshiped them had they not been taken away from me or threatened. I mean, if all my life I had every material thing I'd have, you know, it's like some spoil back, I would never have realized how much I was about as dependent upon them as I was on scotch. I would have never realized how dependent I was and codependent I was, if you want to use that, on other people and how much they affected me if I didn't have people in my life that disappointed me all the time and threw me into a funk. And, you know, I want to point out to you, you have no control over this stuff. I'm powerless over these. I mean, I had to learn about people, places, institutions, like they go about the same way I learned about alcohol. In the same painful method to finally realize that I'm powerless over all this stuff, that I'm dependent upon it, that my life is unmanageable, my thought life is unmanageable, and finally throw myself into God and say, God, help me on this deal. Same exact process with everything in my life, every person, place, and thing in my life, as I did with the alcohol. That's what they say in the sixth and seventh step. Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. So this is our basic text. We cannot be sure that God will determine that, so you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Like that word, crave. Pretty much describes the people in this room. Bill Wilson said, when he talked about emotional sobriety, and he says the real problem with alcoholic is unhealthy dependencies. Unhealthy dependencies. Depending on unhealthy things for something. Craving unhealthy things for something. Craving sex. Craving romance. Craving things. Craving having to have stuff. Needing this and needing this. I'll be happy as long as I have this. I'll be happy as long as I have that. Remember what I said when I started off the meeting? He said he's going to drink again because he's not happy. Remember why he said he's going to drink again? He will soon try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Remember what it says in the big book? It says, we've experienced much of heaven. We've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is this and nothing less, that God has become the central fact of our lives. That God has become the central fact. He lives in our hearts and minds in a way which is indeed miraculous. What does all that have to do? What is being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, experiencing much of heaven, God being the central fact of our lives, being the central fact of our lives, being absolutely certain that He lives in our lives, what does that have to do with being happy and craving things? And I can only share with you what I've discovered about myself. And I got to tell you this is a long process. The things I'm talking about today, I probably started realizing them seriously maybe after I had 25 years. I'd like to be able to say I had 5 months and I knew this. This is like long term stuff. He will show you how to create now this is what the big book says. It's not me. This is the big book. So He will show you how to create. Now what I've discovered about myself is that the longer I'm sober, the more I realize that this big book is exactly me. Exactly me. And if you don't realize the big book's exactly you, then my theory is you just haven't been sober long enough. I think the longer you're sober, the more you will see yourself in the big book, in every aspect of the big book. You'll say, that's not me, and somewhere along the line you'll say, hey, that is me. It says this, He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Now, I think most people who are an alcoholic will agree with the fact that they are powerless over alcohol and that one time they craved alcohol, right? Did you know that according to this book, you crave fellowship? I mean, you may not want to admit that. You may want to be, I don't need anybody. I don't need this stuff, I don't act like I actually need you guys. I come here to try to help other people. It's not like I need you guys. You know what I mean? I mean, it almost makes you sound like I'm some sort of weak guy, But this is what the book says. It says if you're an alcoholic, God is going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Apparently, this disease has something to do with craving fellowship. And so, and after many years of dealing with this disease sober, I've come to realize in my own life, it has to do, part of this disease and the way this disease surfaces long before the alcohol, the way this disease feels like at 5 years old, the way this disease feels like at 10 years old, the way this disease feels like at 16 years old, is emptiness and loneliness. That's what this disease feels like. Emptiness and loneliness and lack of belonging and the desire to be loved. I don't know what it was. I didn't drink at 8 years old, and I didn't drink at 10 years old, and I didn't drink at 15 years old, but I'm convinced I was an alcoholic. So if I look back and I read this stuff about craving fellowship, and I look at what was my one of the primary things, the facets of my life between the ages of 0 and 18, it would be being empty and lonely and craving fellowship. Now, I might be craving a girlfriend, craving a boyfriend, craving somebody, craving friends, or just the opposite, a great deal of sadness feeling I didn't belong or people didn't like me. And I have a feeling I'm not the only one in this room that had that deal going on. So when you crave fellowship, like me, and you're lonely, and you want to belong, and you want to have somebody to talk to, what I used to do is I used to talk to myself. Yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But I used to talk to myself. And I'd have conversations with me. And sometimes I'd have conversations with a lot of me's. I'd have a lot of conversations going on with a lot of me. Let me tell you something. I am capable of carrying on, apparently, 16 conversations at the same time, all about me, with 16 different me's. One guy once said to me, he says, I think you have a split personality. I know it's embarrassing. That's okay, don't worry. You know, 10 years ago, that would have been the end of this fucking deal. You know what I mean? No, really, I mean, it's personal growth on my part. You know what I mean? I would have spent the next half hour talking about how you're not sober or something. I don't know. I would have tooled up on you or something. No, it's okay. It happens to anybody. It happens to me. But in any event, no, listen. Some guy said to me once, he says, I think you have a split personality. I said, I wish I could get it down to one. You know, get it down to two, you know? You know, just. So what happens, I don't know what happens to you, but when you crave fellowship and you crave belonging, and I don't know whether this is true with everything, you tend to have a lot of shit going on in your brain, conversations about yourself, about life. You know, you're just thinking and talking about yourself all the time and talking about things. And there's like crap going on in your mind. And I don't know about your conversations. My conversation was always bad crap about myself and other people. That's why I'd either watch TV or listen to music or do anything to distract me. I don't care whether it's texting, whatever it is. I know why people are always texting and sexting, because anything you can do to distract you from the silence. Because for me to be sitting in a room silent by myself was to sit around with bad thoughts about myself and other people, make me restless and uncomfortable and lonely and empty. And I needed to do something. I needed to get out there and kill something, do something, watch something, listen to something, you know, have sex with something, buy something, do something so that I could take my mind off of me because of all these thoughts, bad thoughts. Now, I'll tell you about my deal. What I found is the best remedy for that was a quart bottle of Colt 45 malt liquor. I found when I drank a quart bottle of Colt 45 malt liquor, I got a sense of ease and comfortability, and all those conversations subsided, and they sounded like this. I had one conversation, and it sounded like this. You are Brad Pitt. Man, when you can drink a quart bottle of Colt 45 malt liquor and cut out all those conversations that you're an idiot, you're stupid, and everything, and the only conversation you're having is telling you look like Brad Pitt, let me tell you, you ain't going to stop drinking that stuff. But unfortunately, it turned on me, and I had to stop drinking, just like you guys had to stop drinking. And you know what I found happened to me when I stopped drinking? The conversations came back. all those conversations came back again. The loneliness came back, the emptiness came back. Those bad conversations about myself and other people, they came back. And that's, to me, that's the real alcoholism. That being disconnected, that being lonely, that being empty, that sense of loneliness that you can't even go into a room and explain, because for some reason you can't even explain it to yourself, and you're scared to explain it because you're absolutely sure that nobody will ever understand what the frick you are talking about. That sense that somehow you don't belong and you'll never belong. And I heard one guy say, you know, he said, I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. I used to put something in my body that turned me into an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. That just that feeling that you just don't connect, you don't belong. And, you know, when I'll tell you what, when you're sober and you're not drinking and you got that deal going on and that restlessness, there's a lot of thinking going on too. And it's, I don't know about you, but it's bad thinking. It's bad thinking about myself. It's bad thinking. It's calling myself names. It's talking crappy about myself. It's talking crappy thinking about other people. There's a lot of fear going on. There's a lot of worry going on. There's a lot of what's going to happen to me going along, or how am I going to handle this, or something terrible is going to happen to me. And that's the way alcoholism looks like in me when I'm not drinking. Now, it took me a long time to realize. Now, you ever notice that when you come to AA, they have you, like, do the serenity prayer at the beginning of every meeting? Have you noticed that? Have you noticed at the end of every meeting you do the Lord's Prayer? Have you noticed that even though we don't like it and we don't talk about it, you ever notice a meeting from time to time they're talking about God? You ever notice that God's all over the big book? You ever notice, like, it's God in the steps and everything like that? No matter how far you try to deny it and everything, you ever notice that they're always... they're always somehow, it's always coming around to that deal. You know, you ever get the feeling that they're like brainwashing you, like they're turning you into, you know? I said to my sponsor, I said, you know, I think you're brainwashing me. He says, well, maybe your brain needs washing. When I think about my work too much and I obsess about my work, it doesn't make me feel good. When I obsess about my problems or my wife or my perceived problems, it doesn't make me feel good. When I obsess about anything, and believe me, for me to think is to obsess. I don't just think about some problem one time. I think about it a million times at 3,000 miles per hour, you know? And I can't stop thinking about it until it's resolved, and it ain't never going to be resolved. You know, I mean, my thinking is shot. I got all these old ideas and all this old stuff, and I come in here and they start pushing me and talking to me and making me practice and think about God and God. And they have me do prayers. They have me do service. They have me do these steps, which are supposed to somehow clear away wreckage so that the sunshine of the Spirit can come in. They have me get down on my knees and accept God and give my life to God. They have me say things like, I can't manage my life. No human power can. Only God could have, would if he was sought. See to a relationship with him is right. Great events will come past you with countless others. It tells me to turn my life over to God. It tells me to do a sixth step and grow in his image and likeness. It tells me to humbly ask God. I mean, these guys are obsessed with God. It's like a God obsession. You know, it tells me when I'm not to just say the serenity prayer over and over again. Do the God stuff, and I'm going to tell you what happened to me in my life, how this happened. So I found, and then, you know, I started doing this stuff, because you know what happens? I'm very, alcoholics are very subject to peer pressure. And I hung around these guys that were doing this stuff. And the next thing I know, at 15 years sober, I'm like in church in a Bible study. And this was pretty weird for a Jewish kid from New York, you understand what I'm saying? And let me tell you something. You don't want to go to a Bible study, because let me tell you something. If you don't like God in AA, you are going to hate Bible study, because all they do is talk about God. That's all they do. They talk about God. They read about God. It's all about God. And I found myself talking about God and reading about God. And as I said, I'm very pliable. You know what I mean? I'm very subject to peer pressure. And the more these guys talked about God, the more I would like think about God, the more I pray about God. And these guys are praying like all the time. They pray before, during, after. I'm not talking about like 1 minute, I'm talking about like 5 minute prayers, 10 minutes. These guys are praying fools. They are crazy. I mean, you and I both know that money is, you know, like right up there with oxygen. These guys don't think so. These guys think like God is like right up there and money's not that. These are crazy people. You don't want to mix them. I made the mistake of mixing myself up with these people. I noticed later on in the big book it said we encourage church membership. I guess it has something to do with the 11th step. I don't know, but I started mixing myself up with these people. And I found myself in here, whenever I read this, I found myself reading more and more and seeing more and more about God. I found myself going to AA and saying more and more, hey, this thing is all about God. I started going to Bible study. It was all about God. Everybody's going. And I found myself in between AA and in between Bible study and in between all this sort of stuff and helping people and talking about this, I found myself constantly thinking about God. I found myself, you know, it says to see to it, your relationship with him is right. When we make a sincere decision, a serious, sincere decision to turn our lives, it says all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him. Stay close to him and perform his work well. Almost like we got to stay close to him. We got to have a relationship. How do you have a relationship with God? How would you have a relationship with me? Well, you'd have to know me. You'd have to come up to me. You'd have to talk to me. We'd have to hang out. We'd go to lunch. The way you have relationships with people is you talk to people. You have a relationship with people. You talk to them. You have discussions with people. You get to know him. You get to read about him. You find out what he wants, what he's interested in. And I find myself more and more talking to people that are talking about God, talking about what God wants, talking about he's got rules. He really does have rules. You know, it has something to do with helping other people and loving on them and not trying to hurt them and not being, they're crazy. Believe me, they're very non-alcoholic. You know what I mean? It's nothing to do with you. It has to do with them and helping people. And it has all to do with loving people and stuff like that. Completely, believe me, I wouldn't have figured this out on a dime. And the more, now here's what the interesting thing is. So the more I'm doing all this stuff and taking all these actions and going to AA and going about and doing all this stuff that really was prompted by AA, the more I found that I was always thinking about God. You could almost say that he became the centerpiece of my life. You can almost say that, you know, they really screwed me up. AA will screw you up, I'll tell you. You know this part where it says, and there is a solution. It says this thing when they're talking about what their solution is. They talk about the great fact, you know. And it says right here. It says the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do for ourselves. They say that after the promises too. You know what I found? And this is like going to blow your mind. What I found is that started happening to me. God started becoming the central fact of my life. I started having like conversations with him. Conversation with God. Can you imagine? Like before I came to the meeting, I'm talking to God. During the meeting, I'm talking to God. I'll leave the meeting, I'll start talking to God. You know what I found out? This is very interesting. When I started talking to God and having conversations with God and relationship with God, you know all those other conversations? Remember all those other conversations? They went away. Just like with the booze. They went away. All I had was like one conversation. Well, let me tell you something. It's a great conversation. It's better than the Brad Pitt conversation. It's better than the Brad Pitt conversation. Because the Brad Pitt conversation is bullshit. Because you know why? Because I'm not Brad Pitt. I'm Russell Spatz. You know what the conversation is I have with God? This is what God says to me. He says, you're Russell Spatz and I love you. He says, you're Russell Spatz and I love you. You're a good guy. It's a great conversation, you know? It tells me I should go out and help people. It says I should show up at the meeting and, you know, be responsible. I should love my kids. It's always good conversations with God. I'll tell you. Always good conversation. If I ever feel guilty or something like that, it's probably because I am guilty and I have to get back into the deal, you know what I mean? And get back into his good graces. But it's almost like what the booze used to do, but without the hangover effect, you know? And it's a better conversation, that single conversation. That rocket in the fourth dimension conversation. That's why I think the God thing is so important, getting the God thing. You know, you can stop the drinking thing. Stopping the thinking thing is a whole different deal. You'll drive yourself nuts going to psychiatrists and psychologists and thinking that try to get the thing, you ain't going to get that thing fixed. The only thing that's ever worked for me, just like they say in the big book, is God. Is having a relationship with God. Focusing on Him, which I believe, based upon my reading of the book, is what these steps are all about. So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk about something else. Okay, and what do we got here? We got a secretary's report.